Here are your hosts, Jason Smith and Cliff Dorfman.
Huzzah! Welcome to a new episode of Stuck at Home with me, Cliff Dorfman, and this guy.
Me, the guy that just found out that my beard is that of a mortal woman and Zeus.
So your beard is demigod, Jason Smith.
Jason Smith, that's right.
Your beard is demigod. What's up, Jason? Well,
no, I'm just excited to be on the pod. You know, Stuck at Home is the pod where that tells you about all the shows we love and want you to love.
Yeah, plus we download you on the streaming wars, what to stream and where to stream it.
Well, and I want to ask you what you're watching today, but first I want to let you know. I'm watching Blood of Zeus.
Blood of Zeus. Tell me about this.
Blood of Zeus is a new animated show on Netflix. It's in the top 10 right now, but it's another retelling of the Greek god stories and some of the mythology there. It stars a character named Heron, who isn't actually a part of the Greek.
I know who Heron is.
Lore. He's not there. He doesn't exist. He's not real.
He does.
He's not. He's a mathematician in regular Greek stuff. But
look up Heron.
I did. And so. Heron.
Say that again. Look up Heron.
I did.
You said it like a mean girl.
I did. I said it like David.
Yeah, I did.
I said it like David from Schitt's Creek. Yeah, Heron's not a Greek hero, so to speak, in the traditional sense.
Mathematician, right?
Yeah, but this is him as a son of Zeus, and a daughter of a mortal, like kind of like Heracles was, and a lot of the Greek gods.
Yeah, demigods were. That's called the demigod. The son of a god and a mortal is a demigod.
Yeah, sometimes, not always.
No, really? Not always. No, always. Is that true?
No, that's true. So that would work for Hercules, but it doesn't work for Achilles. It doesn't work for a lot of there are some that are considered demigods. It's a very special place. But in general, it doesn't necessarily mean that they a lot of times that's who they take, but it's not. I'm a huge fan of the Greek mythology, and I do a lot of this stuff. So yeah.
So wait, so is it, because I am too, at least I thought I was. So is the demigod, then I wonder, is it if the god acknowledges that you're his offspring, then maybe you're a demigod?
Well, it's, you know, the technical term for a demigod is god with anything. So like if it's god with centaur, it could be a demigod centaur. If it's god with Medusa or Gorgon, demigorgon god. It can be with humans, but it's not always true. So you'll see some heroes not actually recognized as demigods, but just as mortal heroes in a lot of Greek stories, even though they have the blood of Zeus in them.
Because
he was
Zeus.
The guy, Zeus, and that's why this is a really fun show. Zeus is the man, right? Zeus is the guy that sneaks into your house, dresses like your husband, treats you right, then leaves, and then your husband comes back all mean, and you're like, what? I thought you were nice now. And he's like, nah, bitch, I'm mean. And then he comes back.
Well, what
and
about insane. Earlier? I wasn't here earlier.
Exactly. So it's a little bit of one of those stories, but it's so far so good.
So it's a rape story.
In a way, there's definitely an aspect of that in a lot of Greek mythology, except in these particular instances, the person that's in that side of this thing is generally the nicer of the two people, and it's the other person that's actually the real husband, the cuck who's the rapist, in a weird sort of way. They're the person forcing themselves on the person. There's definitely a lot of weirdness in Greek mythology, and I don't want to get into all that stuff because that's a whole different show that we don't.
No, let's not.
But
let's not.
The reason I bring it up and I want to talk about it before we bring on Scott is because I think that there's a really interesting phenomenon with Netflix. This is not a show that should be number two most watched in Netflix. And not because it's not good or because it's not quality, because who watches anime? Like the whole country doesn't. Did we before Netflix? No, we didn't. Like not everybody's sitting there watching Dragon Ball Z or Why the Last Man or this kind of stuff. But
because it's international.
But now it's international. And the Netflix charts we see are U.S. based. Right. And so we're seeing top on Netflix for U.S. And these shows are appearing because they're just part of Netflix and people are giving them a shot. Like, it's a really interesting thing that Netflix can do and to elevate just about any show or genre if they're featured in Netflix.
Right. It's all about featuring it in the algorithms.
Yep.
And they can basically pick what they want. Well, this really started. Well, do you want to bring Scott on to talk about this?
Absolutely.
All right. So why don't we do that? So let's not get any further into this streaming stuff until we bring on our producer and regular guest, Mr.
Super streaming expert.
Super streaming expert, Mr. Scott Porch, ladies and gentlemen. There he is. What's up, buddy?
First of all, real quick, for everybody who can't see, I have seen Scott a couple times today, and Scott has a nice, clean-looking, super sexy hairdo that he didn't have earlier today. But today, when I saw him earlier, he looked like Scott from the Corn, and now he looks like
Malachi.
Yeah. Now he looks he's looking smooth, looking sexy, looking first like he's ready to. He looks like he's ready to sell me Apple products.
First haircut since February.
Congratulations! How do you feel?
I feel like I've lost 2 pounds. It was so much hair. I was glad to get that out of here.
Right. So Scott, we got a lot to talk about today. I bring up the blood of Zeus because of, you know, what we were talking about just now. It's just, I think it's really interesting. Not everything hits, you know, we had the Duncan Trussell show that didn't really go anywhere, never really hit the top 10, even though it was featured pretty well. But this one seems to be striking a chord. Have you had a chance to check out Blood of Zeus at all or heard anything?
I haven't. I didn't realize you were going to bring me on. I had just started to text you. This Blood of Zeus shows how Netflix is basically like the big three broadcast networks in the 80s. It's like if they put it on everybody's front page, it has maximum awareness. And, you know, they could have done that with Sarah Cooper. They could have done that with the Holiday movie. But, you know, right now it's this animated Zeus thing, and they can create a pop culture phenomenon by how many home screens, you know, they make something not just available on, but driving awareness on.
Mm-hmm. It's a real phenomenon. We kind of saw this happen with Cobra Kai. We saw this with you. We've seen this with a bunch of different shows that I think I've actually texted Scott as like, why the hell is don't mess with the Zohan from Adam Sandler from long time ago. Like, why is that number 4 on the stream? He's like, well, they just released it on Netflix and now it's big again. Right. Or I think it was 1,000 words I asked you about from Eddie Murphy was the one I was like, there's no reason for this to even be the part of the top 100.
No one at Netflix has told me this, but one reason I think things sometimes pop in that second, third, fourth day is that Netflix has like 24, 48 hours of data where it knows how quickly people are getting through things. And so they say, oh, this one's a banger, let's go wide. And I think that's something that, you know, that you're starting to see more and more where, you know, Netflix A/B tests, you know, everything, features, content. And, you know, they might have seen in this that there was a really high rate of people going quickly through it and just said, you know, this one's got potential to go wide. Let's go wide.
So do you think it's probably algorithm based? Because, OK, so,
yeah,
you know, I'm thinking about TikTok. So the way TikTok works is basically it sends the a video, if you make a video, to a small group of about 100 people. And if those 100 people like it, or if there's enough of a playthrough on it, it sends it out wider to 1,000 people. And if 1,000 people like it, it sends it to 10,000 and up and up, basically. And that's user-generated content. Do you think there's something similar where it puts this on a few home screens, and then if those test well, it starts broadening it until it's big?
Yeah, I mean, Netflix is gathering all of that same data. And, you know, the biggest thing Netflix has, I mean, in addition to, you know, I mean, they've got 200 million, almost 200 million worldwide subscribers now, is they've got the data from all of those subscribers. So they know over years of doing this what works and what doesn't. So they've been able to refine their process of figuring out how people get through, you know, a movie or what people watch next, or, you know, how quickly they get from the first episode to the second episode of a series. And so they've got tons of data. And when something breaks through, they know. And I have noticed a lot of times I look at the top 10 film and TV every day, and very often it's 2 days and 3 days after something comes out when it jumps up to number one.
You know, I wonder, as we're talking about this, I wonder if it's a problem in the making, you know, which leads us to the old days of records and payola, right? So now, let's say I have a show, and I know if Netflix is going to play it, it's going to get, you know, number one, and I'm going to make all this money. So Netflix, all right, I'm going to give you this much money to put it on, or do they just have too much money to even think about this, or can it filter down to the lower levels? I mean, it's hypothetical, but I think it's an interesting idea. You know, because go ahead, Scott.
Except that's not how Netflix pays. Nobody, the people that Netflix, I mean, Netflix makes a lot of its own, titles now, but the people that it pays the titles to they right. don't know. You mean they don't know how big their shows are.
Right.
You know,
no, but wait, let me interrupt for a second. And I don't like to interrupt, but before I forget, it's like the Olympics. I see what you're doing. It's
hold on.
Both of you. Wait, hold on. Go ahead. Yeah, people like it. Okay. I don't interrupt. Okay, good. Have we gotten that now? And I forgot what I was going to say. No, it's like the Olympics. It's like the, I really love you though. It's like the Olympics, like where, you know, you have a guy who's going, you know, the head of acquisitions for Holland, you know, and the head of acquisitions for Holland has to buy 18 shows and movies for Netflix. Well, they have to pick those movies. So now people are coming at him and courting him and saying, all right, I'm going to give you 100 extra K if you make sure you buy our movie and make it a Netflix original. So, you know, can content suffer? We're going to get see crappier stuff because they can put it in the algorithm. I'm just
it's
saying.
Hard to game 200 million accounts. I mean, yeah. There's Netflix is now so big and has such a data advantage over its suppliers and its competitors that it's very, very difficult to game the content, you know, well, that's on Netflix.
I would think that too. I mean, the difference between stuff on network broadcast and this truly is ad sales, right? The purpose of the content. The purpose of the content on Netflix is to bring more subscribers to the platform. Right. It doesn't, they don't really, they care what's big hits because they care what drives subscribers, but there's probably data that says this show is a bit, you know, and this happens in regular TV, and this is one of the problems they had with Game of Thrones, actually, for HBO. A lot of people watch it. Not everybody's subscribing because of it, right? And so you can spend all that money on that one show, and you're hoping that you get people that subscribe. But it doesn't necessarily drive it. So those numbers and the rating system helps us, but it doesn't necessarily isn't their number one consideration for renewing.
No,
for the show.
And this Zeus series, I mean, I don't know. I don't have access to any of this data, but I'm going to guess this Zeus series is probably not that big with like people who subscribe to the service today. It's not the reason you subscribed. It's right. It's what you're watching today, if you're a 2, 3, 4, 5, 8 year subscriber, because that's what they're showing you today. But that's probably not the kind of original that's making you sign up. If that's why you're, you know, if you're signing up for the service today, it's probably for some other reason.
You're probably watching it because Mandalorian hasn't come out yet, and it's the only cartoon
wait,
available.
Before that's you get new. Into Mandalorian, or, wait.
Or you're a TikToker and the Sarah Cooper, I'm sure that was part of the motivation of putting, you know, a Sarah Cooper special on Netflix this week was let's go after the younger sort of TikTok viewing crowd who knows who she is and let's give them a 52-minute special to watch. Let's draw in that younger right. crowd.
Well, that's actually pretty interesting you say that because there's also another show I think geared towards the younger generation of the YA that came out this week, Grand Army,
mm-hmm.
Which also is, you know, it's definitely, I actually have been enjoying the show. I don't think that you guys have probably checked it out quite yet, but it's out of Ontario, Canada. And I really like this one, and it's definitely built like as a kind of a, not Breaking Bad, but more of an adult themed teen show, something that's kind of hits with the teens in a darker way that I really like that probably is hitting that same
and time. It's ranked in the US. I think it was third or fourth last time mm-hmm. I looked. So it's doing really well. There's a, I don't remember the title of it, but there's a sort of a rom-com-y sort of Gen Z series that's coming in the next couple of weeks that I think is probably going to do really well too.
But what we aren't saying is that these huge hits, you know, and I think that this rating system does help Netflix because they're able to then go do their marketing and promotion to all the non-subscribers because they've heard of these big shows. Oh, I want Umbrella Academy. I want, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then like, oh, well, if you want it, you got to come over here.
Yep.
Absolutely.
That is true. And speaking of, as we kind of move into content and more about this stuff, because I want to get to Peacock too. You guys see they just announced a price increase for Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Dollar.
Yep.
How much?
A couple bucks.
I think it's like a dollar in the medium tier and a couple of dollars in the higher tier, depending on which one you subscribe to.
Yeah. So it's,
there are tiers on Netflix. Sorry.
There's the basic plan, which is an SD plan. That is like $8 to $9 a month. And then there's an HD plan. So if, I don't know why anybody's still on SD, but if there's people watching in 480p, Yeah, for phones. Or yeah, you're just like, you know what? I just like this. My cathode ray TV. There's an HD plan, which I'm sure where most people are. That's 11, moving from 11 to 13, and then the premium plan, which is the 4K plan with, you know, three being able to share it with three or four people. That's going up to about $16 to $18.
But you can share the one that's going up to 13 as well.
For four. I can't remember. Yeah, the top one is four, right?
Yeah, the top one's four. So it's not huge, but this is what's really interesting about this to me. When we start talking about $16, $18, $19, we're really running the line against what, you know, and it's hard to find these, but it is possible if you actually call the services to a basic cable package, a basic like top 30 cable package on streaming or on cable. So that's basically Netflix is kind of positioning itself at that top tier as your only.
Yeah, the only thing you need. Get an Apple TV and Netflix and you can just hole up.
Yep. Taco Maniac, you got a question real quick while we're doing this?
Well, I mean, that's what they said, but now we don't know the question.
And I think you're seeing HBO Max and Peacock and what you're going to see from CBS All Access when it changes to Paramount Plus early next year. They're looking at that very broadcasty sort of model too, where it's, you know, a little bit for mom, a little bit for dad, a little bit for the kids.
Right. But they're also saying, you know, because that's what, if you want HBO, it's $18, $19 a month. So they're saying, and really the truth is they offer much more than HBO. Mm-hmm. They should actually be more a month than HBO. Technically you could argue.
Yeah. I don't disagree with the pricing. I think it's just an interesting play because what you're really doing is you're setting up Netflix. And like Great Gatsby said, it's only an 8% increase over the last 2 years, but it is putting you in an interesting position because you have this, you know, you have these tiers of stuff where you got $3 tiers, $4 tiers, $6 tiers, and 18. So basically what you're calling, what Netflix seems to be doing in my mind is establishing itself as basic cable. This is your baseline. Everybody has to have Netflix. You can have Netflix and Hulu, Netflix and Peacock or something, but Netflix, they're trying to situate as kind of your baseline premium streamer.
Jason, do you know who Great Gatsby on Twitter is?
No.
That's a must watch Netflix edition host and frequent stuck at home guest, Brandon Katz.
Jesus, why am I putting that, giving that guy more airtime?
I know, like all we do is give him airtime. I mean, I love him though. He's great.
I love him so much.
And that Phil Rosenthal interview, I mean, that's good stuff. So
he's good, yeah. I was listening to it for the third time this morning.
No, yeah, everything really those guys do, Brandon and Gene, they're really must-watch Netflix edition. So, all right. And I like his little commentary because we got the Observer, like, you know, info coming on the crawl. All right. Jason, you're doing excellent, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
You need that from me. Like, I will smack
you. Are you interrupting me? No, I'm just kidding. Yes.
Okay, but so, let's get back to this. But I think that the price increase is not so terrible.
Yeah.
But you're right, Jason. It's the baseline. It's right. Like Netflix and one other thing if you can afford it.
Well, that's the thing. You know, a lot of these things are trying to stay competitive with the under $10 basically crowd. And maybe there's a couple $12 no ad free zones. But this is the first one that's really going to break 20 within the next couple of years. It'll be the first one that really establishes itself as a, you know, monthly, this is the weird CEO, you know, living in LA kind of guy. Like this is it before it's like the one latte cost, right? It's one latte for a streaming service for a month, but now we're talking a movie ticket, right? You know, and we're talking a little bit of a higher price point that doesn't feel like if you're missing $20 from your account, it's a lot easier to notice than a $5 monthly reoccurring.
Mm-hmm. And that's, Jason, that's where you may have a different read on the difference between the HD tier and the 4K tier. I go back and forth between the two kind of to compare them periodically, but on a 55 inch and 65 inch TVs that I have, I don't notice the difference between 4K and HD.
Most people, I would say 95% of America will notice no difference between the two, especially because you have to sit the way 4K works is you have to have a TV that's about 60 to 65 inches and you'd have to be sitting like 3 or 4 feet away from it, right? That's when 4K really doesn't
work. And you have to have it tuned properly.
Yeah, and you have to have it tuned properly, but you basically have to sit very close to a very big TV. Once you start going to that 100-inch, you can be back a little bit. But in general, that's, you know, that's projector size. Most people won't notice because their eyes aren't good enough. And they're sitting, most people sit a lot further back from their television than they realize they're supposed to. Reason these TVs look beautiful and seem to be so exciting in the, in the stores, in the big box stores, is because they're letting you walk right up to them. You're actually watching TV from a foot away. Of course it looks stunning. You take it, you compare that same TV against another 1080p TV, and you're standing 6 feet back. You couldn't tell the difference between the two. I have the 4K only because I share my Netflix with my parents, and my parents-in-law. So we need all four of those simultaneous streams.
You have it for the multiple people, not for the 4K itself.
I think that's probably true of most people that have the upper package is for the simultaneous streams.
Yeah, I agree. But do you still watch stuff in 4K?
You don't really have a choice.
Oh, okay, that's how it goes.
Yeah, it just kind of does it.
Wait, do you lose other things, or they just say that's not available to watch in 4K?
It just doesn't.
Some things are not. It'll show you the little logo on the screen. It'll either say HD or 4K. And even some of their originals, depending on when they made it, some of the originals are not even in 4K.
Yeah.
Right. But still, you know, they are positioned now. What'd they say? 195 million, you guys, worldwide subscribers. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, this is a cult times, you know, organized religion.
Yeah, it's insane.
All right, no one's got anything to that. that just landed flat.
Oh no! It's a huge kind of interface with everything, you know. And that's, I think that's what's beautiful about it. I don't have a problem with this kind of collection. I mean, in my perfect world, everything's available to everybody, and there's no, you know, these platforms are not the limiter. Unfortunately, that's just never going to be the case because you can't get everybody to just agree and have that flat fee type structure and let it work for everybody. But, you know, well, like, go ahead.
This is purely, I was going to say about Netflix, this is purely subjective and anecdotal. And I don't necessarily think all that representative of other viewers, but I find less and less that I want to watch on Netflix relative to other services. I'm seeing less that interests me on Netflix here lately. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting, Scott. I got to tell you, I'm not going to argue with you. And it's interesting because if you have to choose one, you might choose Netflix. But then if you were stuck with only Netflix, you'd really be missing a lot.
Well, HBO Max's film catalog is unparalleled. I mean, I spent a lot of time just, Brandon's saying bullish on HBO Max long term. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I am too.
Me too.
Their film catalog is unparalleled. I mean, I was sitting down just looking through some films. I had not seen Cats yet and wanted to see the cockroach scene in Cats and just like watched that part. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And then went on to something else. But it's like, they've got everything. And that's not even a Warner film. That's a Universal film. So they've aggressively gone out and built a really phenomenal film catalog.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that you guys are right. I think what Netflix has right now is a lot of good name recognition. For us, we've seen a lot of the things that are on there, and it's tougher for us. But in general, with Netflix, I think what they do offer is a very interesting worldwide catalog. And I'm very excited and happy to see a lot of these international shows. And that's kind of my new flavor right now is I like to watch, I'm watching things that aren't American. And that's a place where you can kind of go to get those, I think, in general. But it, you know, like you said, my first, you know, it's one of those things where my first choice now is HBO Max. I look there first, if there's something new there and there, you know, and then second we'll go to Netflix. I also am a big fan of Prime, but not because of their, I just like Prime because that's the one place you can go on any box and actually order something. You can actually buy a video if you don't have something you want.
Right. I go, you know where I go first? I go right to the Apple TV logo to see like what's up in my up next.
Yeah.
Like, you know, AMC Plus, the Gangs of London will come up there. You know, I'll get different things that are connected to that. But then when I jump from there, the first place I go is Hulu.
You know, you talk about international shows and what's on Netflix and what's on other services. And I think, you know, the three of us are watching a lot of the same stuff. But yeah, the most exciting shows to me right now are Tehran on Apple TV Plus, Gangs of London on AMC Plus. I mean, those are probably the two shows I'm most excited about right now.
Yep. Agreed. I think Tehran is as good as the first season of Homeland. When I saw it, it's really something special. And the season finale is on Friday night. Hey, Steph.
Tomorrow. Yeah.
What did I say?
Well, I was thinking tonight at midnight is when it comes.
I don't know what I said. Yeah. I wasn't being tomorrow. A dick.
Yeah.
So did I say Monday?
Those are great. I mean, and what's, you know, so what you said, we had some Peacock news today too. Also, we haven't really mentioned yet.
Comcast reported earnings this morning and said Peacock now has 22 million signups, which is a little different than when we talk about subscribers with Netflix and HBO Max, because those are services that you pay for. But I mean, it's still pretty remarkable that 22 million people have signed up for Peacock. It's a free service. There's a lot of stuff that's there, and The Office is coming in January. So, and I'm watching it some.
How does that equate to data? Like, in other words, so you got 22 million signups. That's all about data. And how are they taking? Because this is what I get is that data is money. What I don't get is how they monetize the data.
So when you see, like, when Disney reports earnings, they'll show, they have a metric called average revenue per user, ARPU. And they'll show, like, for an advertising supported service like Hulu, they'll show ARPU of like $5, $6 a subscriber from the ad revenue, and then $5 or $6, for the difference between the ad supported and the premium parts. That's not necessarily what everybody's making, but you can kind of pull from that a really good ad supported streamer can make about $5 a month off of you in ad revenue. And so that's a lot, that's a lot for one service in one month, to generate,
times 22 sales. Million.
Yeah. And that's Peacock's business plan. That is Peacock's business plan is to show you ads.
Right. They were not really there to be subscriber based. Go ahead, Jace.
No, I was just curious about with Peacock and that number. I was just curious what 22 million means in comparison to, say, HBO or, not necessarily. We know where Netflix is, and obviously it's been around a long time, but where it kind of lines up against Hulu and HBO. And I know their pay, so it's not a little bit different, but is that on par with them, or is that lower or higher?
We're not going to know what it means for a while until the analysts have got more quarters of data and are able to sort of deduce from the advertising revenue and what's typical on other streamers as far as average revenue per user, how many users are actively using the service every month. So, I think it's just going to be a little while until we know. But, this is the future for Universal, just like HBO Max is for Warner. And, Paramount Plus is going to be for Viacom CBS. NBC Universal has focused everything on making Peacock work. They're leveraging their Sky shows, which is part of the same company. Sky in UK is also owned by Comcast.
Which is where we get Gangs of London, correct?
Right. You have to send me that link.
That's right. Yeah. Sky made Gangs of London. And if Peacock had been around a year ago, Gangs of London would probably be on Peacock. So, their Peacock is going to get first crack at a lot of those shows going forward. The Office is coming in January. We've talked about, AP Bio before on this show. That's, season 3 is a Peacock exclusive. They're doing a lot of news. They've got an election hub. You can watch Meet the Press, sometime Sunday afternoon after it airs on NBC on Sunday morning. They're going to, like, the Morning Joe crew is going to do election night coverage on Peacock that's separate from the election night coverage that MSNBC is going to do. So, they're pushing pretty hard. They've got two late night shows, Larry Wilmore's show and Amber Ruffin's show that air on Friday night are exclusive to Peacock. So they're definitely trying to program it like something like a hybrid of old school NBC and a Netflix like.
Yeah. Well, they have that weird, like basically channel surfing that you can do where they actually have channels on Peacock. So which is weird to me. Like the first thing you do is you get onto like a Hulu style live screen. You're like, oh, I'm just watching whatever episode of Saturday Night Live's on this channel right now, which I forget how to get to the other side.
I can actually pick stuff.
I don't like those as a viewer. I don't like those. I know those are popular. That's how Pluto TV basically built its business around what they call live linear, but they're not even really live. It's just, you know, reruns of RuPaul's Drag Race or whatever. But the idea is that when you turn it on, you're watching, and that you don't have to sort of go through the decision-making process. Way you used to click through cable channels. You know, you can now do a version of this on Peacock and other services. And it makes sense to me for live services. You know, I think Peacock has the NBC News now, and then they'll have, you know, a couple of other things that are live. The Saturday Night Live live thing actually makes a lot of sense to me, because those sketches are, you know, 3 or 4 minutes long. So starting in the middle of something, you don't have to wait too long until you've got another one to watch.
It kind of worked out for me, because I ran into one. I was like, oh, I remember this. And it made me look.
Oh, yeah. Those have been I've watched that several times. Those have been great.
So I am. And this is just the question around Peacock. You know, I know that NBC Universal was only a minority investor in Quibi, but has that investment into Quibi created any, do you think that's created any sort of concern with their push towards Peacock? Because that obviously, even a minority investment in that was a few $100 million, and it didn't really go anywhere.
So I'd answer that a couple of different ways. Most of the major entertainment media companies that invested in Quibi basically were getting the equivalent of their investment back in the content that they made for the service. So I don't remember exactly which film titles, you know, of the serialized things on Quibi were made by NBC Universal, but all of that stuff comes back. So, you know, what they paid into Quibi, they're basically getting back. Got in it. Their originals. And like that 60 on 6, whatever that was called, the short version of 60 Minutes that did for Quibi. It was an article in one of the trade magazines earlier this week that they're probably going to keep that in some form. And I had an interview with Andy Forsell and Decider at the beginning of this week, who's the head of HBO Max. And he told me in that interview that they're going to start putting more short form on the phone version of the HBO Max app, so that, like, if you watch Lovecraft Country and you listen to the Lovecraft Country podcast, that is eventually going to be like a pop up or something below the, you know, the end of the episode. Do you want to listen to the podcast now if you're on your phone? And they're probably going to do some shorter form things. I could easily imagine when the Snyder Cut next trailer or whatever comes out, that they'll send out a, you know, an alert, just like what you see on YouTube or, you know, Twitter now, but that they'll actually do that right in the app, because they're going to have a captive audience that's interested in those shorter form things. And they want you to check in between watching their app at night, so you'll remember them. So I think Quibi was in a different business. I think Quibi was trying to get you to pay $5 or $8 a month to subscribe to this new thing that you weren't familiar with. And I think that's just a different business than NBC Universal or HBO trying to get you to watch new things on your mobile on a service you already subscribe to, or in Peacock's case, a free service.
Mm-hmm. And Cliff, I'll let you go after this one, but what is that where everybody's watching? Is this being watched from the majority of the stuff being watched from mobile?
Most of the metrics are about, I think there was a new report out earlier this week that was about 40% mobile. That seems high. I think most what Andy Forsell from HBO Max told me, that it was about 2/3 living room, 1/3 mobile.
That seems so, right.
Yeah, somewhere between 35% and 40%, sounds
it's
like.
Funny. Well, it seems right, but at the same time, I guess I live in a different bubble than everybody else does, like literally in a bubble where I don't leave. And so the idea of 40% of it right now being watched on mobile just makes me scream, like, you're stuck at home.
Well, you got to remember, too, there's pretty good survey data on Americans younger than like 22 years old. They don't think of the TV any differently than their phone. I mean, they'll watch.
Except when it comes to Quibi.
Yeah, but they don't want to pay for Quibi. That was what the thing about Quibi was. If Quibi had been a free service and it had the catalog that NBC Universal has, it would be Peacock, which has 22 million subscribers. So I think, you know, I mean, to go back to Quibi, I think part of the failure was getting people to pay for something new. And, you know, Gen Z 18, 17, 16 year olds, they'll watch a 2 hour movie on their phone with a TV turned off across the room. I mean, that's just a different market. So that's where a show like Euphoria on HBO was a much bigger hit on digital, because younger viewers are who's watching that show.
Yeah. I had a TV installed in my daughter's room when we first moved here. It didn't get plugged in till like a week ago.
Yeah, she doesn't care.
No, I taught her how to do a Chromecasting, like to Chromecast something from her phone to her thing. So every once in a while she does it, but that's only when she's trying to watch two shows at the same time.
and you know, in developing countries, you know, in I think India has a lower price of Netflix and some other services specifically for the phone. So, you know, in a lot of developing countries where mobile technology basically leapfrogged, you know, wireline and broadband technology, that's what their entertainment is. It's on their phone first. That's their main device.
Right. Well, that's, I mean, India is almost at a point where there's, it's like 1 point something, like maybe 1.1 phones per person, right? Like India is at a place where not only does every single person have access to a phone, a lot of people have two or three, and that's their own, but those are their devices, like solely.
Yeah. So that's where a lot of that 35 to 40% is coming from, younger viewers and, you know, a lot of international viewers.
Right on. Right on. Cliff, you got any questions for the man?
No, I mean, you guys covered it really well. So I was just kind of enjoying and listening and downloading. This is awesome. Good stuff.
No, this is good. Before we let you go, Scott, want to just talk about a couple projects that we've been working on together and as a team here at the Stuck at Home team. First is we talked to Brandon yesterday. Must watch Netflix edition. Mm-hmm. Must watch : Netflix edition.
Netflix edition.
Exclamation point! Don't mess it up, Brandon. I got it right. Must watch. And then there's a new one, Cliff. I don't know if we've talked about this. I've been moonlighting on you for about a day now.
Tell me.
I'm sorry to say, I'm doing a Mandalorian recap podcast with Dave Schilling called Must Watch Mandalorian Edition. Boom.
Oh, cool.
Starts, we've recorded the first episode of that today. And that's a preview or a review of season one of The Mandalorian, a kind of a preview of season two. And as soon as the editing is done, that'll go up probably tonight.
It'll be up today, and then we'll be doing new episodes every Friday. So right after the episode drops, we'll be doing a review. It's for the next 7 to 8 weeks while we watch through the Mandalorian show, and that'll evolve into something else that Dave's doing. But I wanted to get in there and talk some Mandalorian, get really into that. This last episode was good. This first episode, we talk a lot about what's going on in the first season, what happened, a little bit of the kind of behind the scenes stuff, a little bit of what we want to see coming up in season two based on the trailers. And I think it'll be a lot of fun, but you know, must watch Mandalorian with Dave Schilling and a little bit of Jason.
And must watch Netflix edition with Brandon Katz and Gene Bentley. And this idea of must watch is really something Jason and I have been talking about for a long time. And a lot of the things we talk about on this show of just, you know, really two different kinds of shows, you know, one where we're really trying to find some navigation of services, and that's really what Netflix edition is. And then in other cases, you're just wanting a deeper engagement, like what the Mandalorian show is going to be. And it's kind of the two sides of what, you know, of what this show is: discovery on one side and sort of a deeper engagement on the other.
But for and just for the record, for all you out there going, what, all this other stuff, we are still the flagship of all this stuff. We're talking about all the different pieces, all the different technology. We're the ones talking about the craft and all those pieces. So this is kind of like, you know, we're stuck at home, but at the same time, we're part of this little family of shows that we're building around content that really is to like just give everybody a little bit of what they want from different people in our new stuck at home family and our must watch family.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Scott. You look beautiful. Your camera looks great. I love the hair, but I also love the whatever camera you got on your iPhone or whatever this is looks awesome. Look great.
Just a plain old iPhone with the bathroom light turned on.
With good lighting.
Glow me perfect. Up.
You look beautiful. You glowed up real good. You glowed up and you glowed up and you glowed up.
Oh, Swingers is on HBO Max starting November 1st. I wanted to get that in there. Yeah. For all of you, Jason and I have already discussed. We probably need to do a separate episode on it. But yeah, my all-time favorite movie is going to be on HBO Max starting November 1st.
Awesome. Awesome, brother. Well, good to see you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Scott. Right, thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
All right. That was informative.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. No, there was a lot of stuff. It was just more like listening and understanding. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's actually rather interesting.
Yeah. No, it's good to know. I think there's some interesting stuff going on out there. I think that this, you know, we talk about the streaming wars and all this stuff, but I really think that there is like this critical mass piece that's going to hit here, and it's going to be coming around pricing, you know, which means you need to save money in other places. That's right. Why I recommend going to MeUndies.com and using offer code STUCK, because if you saving 15% on underwear, that's half a Hulu subscription. You can save half a Hulu subscription and get the softest, most comfortable underwear every month by signing up for MeUndies at MeUndies.com/STUCK.
Yeah. I feel like you said that now, so we're not going to say anything more. You did the MeUndies.com/STUCK. I was like, that's very good. I'm not going to argue. I mean, you know, get the membership though, especially with the discount.
Yeah.
The membership is the way to go.
Get the membership, get some soft on you know, wrap soft up on you. Get some soft on you. That's my new kind of 2020 mantra. Just get some soft on you. You know, everything's it's rough out there. Get some soft on you.
Yeah.
Boom. Look at that. You wouldn't know that I came from advertising at all, huh? Look at me. I just made us a $1 billion new idea.
Fantastic.
MeUndies. 2020's rough on you.
Yeah.
Get some soft on you.
Get some soft on you. 2020.
2020.
Get some soft on you. MeUndies.com. Offer code STUCK. How's that?
Oh. So we got through lots of stuff today already.
Yeah, we really did.
I wanted to see there, you know, and we kind of gotten through a lot of what I would consider the news of today. Mm-hmm. There isn't a ton more news out there. The biggest thing I saw was the Netflix piece. And obviously we talked that Mandalorian's coming back, and about the Peacock stuff. I have a couple trailers to play if you're interested. Otherwise, we can get into content.
Yeah, and I watched an interesting movie, so we could talk a little about that too. What trailers you want?
I was going to play the. It's a real quick one, but we got a new, just a little special one for Halloween. If you're into it,
Yeah, sure, absolutely. What is it? I'm kind of interested now.
Next Halloween, when the sun sets and someone is alone. He kills.
Next Halloween. Halloween Kills. Oh man, they really not kidding. It is next Halloween. They don't next mean Halloween. Saturday.
No, they don't mean Saturday.
That's a bummer. Watch that whole thing. I'm like, oh wait, it's check my face. Okay, I will, Macy. I will check my Facebook message. I can't do it now though.
Yeah.
I don't think I can do it now. No. They make us wait a year in advance. They already have that footage shot. I mean, when did they shoot it?
I'm sure that's been shot. I'm sure a bunch of it was shot already. We can get into it a little bit more, but this is based off of the new kind of, not reboot, because it's based off the original movie, the John Carpenter movie. Mm-hmm. This would be considered the third in a trilogy because they got rid of the, you know, Halloween 2 through whatever were kind of taken out of the continuity. So the second one was Halloween, came out last year. It was written by Danny McBride.
Mm-hmm.
And it was directed by, I believe that one was also directed by David Gordon Green. Mm-hmm. And so this would be the third in the in a trilogy, again starting Jamie Lee Curtis. Did you get a chance to watch the kind of the updated Halloween from last year?
Yeah, I saw.
What do you think of the?
I thought, as far as all these Halloweens go, it was the best one they had put out in a while.
Yeah,
that's what I thought. I mean, listen, I can always watch Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah. Well, I like what they did with Jamie. I like that, you know, it's kind of a, you know,
she was like crazy and, you yeah. know, like the people like, oh, you're like the weird older lady who went through that trauma and you won't let it go.
Right. You know, I like the prepper one. She's a great yeah. prepper, right? Like her best role is Terminator 2, probably for most people. And
you're confusing your actors.
No, you're wrong. You're right. I'm sorry. That's,
yeah, that's okay. That's okay. I just wanted to stop you before you got any further.
You're right. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
That's not Jamie Lee Curtis. Her other best role that everybody knows her from is probably True Lies.
For me, it's Trading Places.
And Trading Places, of course.
Trading Places.
But what I meant to say is like you have these two, you know, these two people in the concept of the woman who's like kind of the oracle of something that's going to happen in the future that doesn't let it go, very mother centric and also like wanting to care, but also like, I'm going to take this into my own hands because nobody's listening to me is a great look for her. And
yes, I agree.
And that whole ending where he kind of like, it didn't come as a surprise that she was awesome, but it came as a surprise like, oh, we trapped you down here, motherfucker. Like we had a whole basement full of crazy ready for you.
Right.
And I thought that was a really interesting way to end that movie.
I do too. So I wonder how they're picking this one up.
Yeah. Well, I think that at the end of the day,
is it brand new?
I think they have to embrace that Michael Myers is a supernatural creature. And that
they haven't officially done that though, right?
Technically, no. I mean, he's gotten stabbed in the face and like lived through a lot of murder. Like technically, no, but he can pick people up and hang them up on things. And oh yeah, Macy said, this is another one. Freaky Friday. Absolutely. Very good. Jamie Lee Curtis movie.
But she's the best. I love her. Love her. But this I'm saying at this point, you have to kind of reboot the whole thing, right? But you have Jamie Lee Curtis. So what are you doing?
Yeah, you also have Anthony Michael Hall is going to be in this one.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, as
Tommy wasn't he in trouble or something recently? Like that guy screwed. Like he's like, I was like, he decided to do steroids and then he changed everything. That's allegedly.
Trouble for getting in a fight with some people in a Texas bar.
Is that what it was?
Because he wouldn't turn his music down.
Hey, listen, I don't want to fight the guy. The guy is pretty ripped. The guy went from really being a nerd.
I think this is where we started getting into the jokes. Like you don't want to get in a fight with him or
Carrot Top.
Carrot Top, yeah.
Yeah, like, but I'd like to see him and Carrot Top in a steel cage match.
Absolutely.
100%. Anthony Michael Hall and Carrot Top to support CORE COVID relief in a steel cage match. Sean Penn is the mediator.
Oh, that's so funny.
Right. He's never watching the fight. Just you, every time you cut to Sean Penn, who's supposed to be watching the fight to make sure no one's doing anything dirty, he's on his phone.
He's not paying attention at all.
No, not at all. He's smoking a cigar, drinking some scotch.
Yeah, he's talking to somebody, some girl about probably his wife.
Layla. He's talking to Layla.
Talking to Layla about a band nobody ever has ever heard of before except him.
Yeah, but then he's going to make sure everyone knows them.
And
oh, by the way, someone died in the ring.
It's a Tibetan flute ska band that nobody's ever heard of before.
I would put my money on Carrot Top.
I would. Anthony Michael Hall is got more anger, I think, than Carrot Top does.
Is Anthony Michael Hall technically a redhead?
That's a good question.
Because if he's technically a redhead, that's a fight to the death. That's like some Russell Crowe shit. I mean, that is, you know, because they got the strong gene.
They do.
I will always bet on a redhead in an MMA fight.
Oh, yeah. Because it's got
every single time. And I won't fight a redhead. I'll run so fast.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. They're very strong. They don't even know how strong they are. They're like farm strong.
Is Connor a redhead?
I bet he is. I'm telling you, they're farm strong. You know, like Lenny from Mice and Men. Hugged her.
It's because they don't have. He's blonde. Mace said he's blonde. I would say Connor probably is because Connor. They don't have souls. That's right. Right.
Redheads. According to South Park. Right. Yeah,
they don't have souls, so they don't feel pain like the rest of us. There's no concern of death because they're.
I would say
they
have a bigger soul.
Yeah.
Redheads. I would say they have more soul. That's what I'm saying. I don't believe they have no soul. That being said, I still want to see that steel cage rally to the death. Yeah. Are you not entertained? Anthony Michael Hall and Carrot Top. I mean, seriously, that might raise $18 million for CORE COVID relief.
Oh.
CORE.
I do have one last piece of good news.
What? Tell me.
We haven't talked about it here, but you probably know this already. There's a TV show out there starring... what's the guy's name? Jason Sudeikis. It's a Bill Lawrence show. It's very small. Nobody's ever heard of it. I just kind of got into it a couple days ago.
No one heard of it when we started watching it.
You know, I just kind of heard of it. I wasn't really paying attention, but
this is unprecedented.
Coming a big way. But Ted Lasso, the show on Apple Plus
that we kind of like.
that we kind of like so much that I've watched the entire series four times all the way through.
You've done it four times already?
Yeah.
I've only done it twice. Okay, go on.
It is being renewed for season three. It's being already greenlit for season three. So they haven't even started production on season two yet. They've greenlit season three.
That's the best. And by the way, that was the best news I had all week. On top of it, I believe this is unprecedented.
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely one of those things that doesn't happen very often. You see this happen with shows that have been around for a while, right? You get an SNL or an Archer, renewed for two or three seasons.
That's different. They'll do a two-season renew at once.
Right.
You know, but they're not doing like, oh, yeah, we renewed you for season two. And then, oh, wait, you haven't started shooting yet? We're renewing you for season three.
Yep, absolutely. It's definitely not something that happens very often.
I've never heard it. I mean, I'm not saying it never happened, but it's crazy. And it's so well-deserved.
It really says something for the show. I mean, I assume what that means is they're getting in there. They're getting production ready. They're doing all this stuff. And they're like, oh, shit, we can do this? Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's different cost savings. There's different ways that they can produce it and get it out there into the world that just must make it feel like one of those shows. Like, this is a no-brainer. Like, if we're going to do one season, let's do three seasons.
Well, I mean, we're only being, we're being hypothetical, but, you know, I wonder if, you know, they were looking at some scripts in season two, mm-hmm. not knowing what's going on with COVID, loving what was happening. And they're like, listen, if we just renew you right now, instead of shooting 10 episodes, you can just shoot 20.
Yep.
And then we'll have them banked.
Yep. That's what I think is going on. I think that they're just like, let's get this thing done. Let's really do it. People really love the first season. And we like what you're doing already. They've had to have read some of these scripts and been very excited. It can't be one of those things where you're like, oh, these scripts are a problem, but let's renew
you
anyway.
Let's renew you anyway. Yeah. No, they have to be on fire right now.
Yeah. Like, all of a sudden, you know, one of the things that always cracks me up, I always tell my wife about this, is like children's movies. Like every Harry Potter has to be darker than the next one. It can't be more magical than the next one. It can't be sweeter than the next one. Every TV show, or whether it's Star Wars or fucking Harry Potter or whatever, every season's darker. I want Ted Lasso to be lighter every episode, nicer every episode season, where it's the exact opposite, where everything else is like, oh, we just got real dark. Ted stubbed his toe and he cried. Right. You see a tear.
Yeah.
Like, no, we don't need it to go darker. Nobody has to go into a shame spiral of alcoholism and drug abuse in the show to make it good.
Yeah. Give someone an eating disorder.
Yeah.
No. You know, like, just keep it exactly at the tone you have it at.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly. Without
lighter.
Getting silly with it.
Yeah.
Keep it where you are. And I think that that's one thing I think Bill does a really great job with is maintaining the integrity of it. But also, I mean, Sudeikis has been a freaking gem with this whole thing. He goes out and he retweets people. He likes other people's posts. He's out there really interacting with fans and people who love the show and it seems very grateful for the success of the show. And I think that has a lot to do with what's going on.
Listen, I agree. I think it's like with Schitt's Creek, you know, it hits on those tenets, the Star Trek tenets. That's what I think. It's like, we all accept you, you know, for everything you are and everything you do. And that's not what we're writing about.
Yep,
we're 100%. Writing about just the things that happen to everyday people, and race, creed, color, ethnicity, gender, et cetera, has no bearing, just for humor.
We're not going to ignore those things, but we're also not going to make them the central sticking points between all these pieces.
Yes, and we're going to make it like, you know, everything's accepted. So we're not saying, oh, this has to still be accepted by society. In these universes, we walk into everything being accepted. Yep. And if there are any shortcomings or prejudices, they're dealt with immediately and, you know, and hammered out.
Dang right. All right. So that's news for today. You have a couple of content you want to do. Let's get into it. We got about 6 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I watched, it's a very, very weird movie. It's called The Devil All the Time. It's on Netflix. It's Antonio Campos. And I think he wrote it with his, I don't know if it's his brother or his son or.
Story by Donald Ray Pollock, screenplay by Antonio Campos and Paulo Campos.
Right. So they're related, I'd imagine. And Antonio Campos directed it. And it's Robert Pattinson.
Yep.
There's what's her name? Amy Wazikowski, I think. Or Mia. Is it Mia? No, it's Mia Wazikowski, I think, is her name. From Alice in Wonderland, you know, the Tim Burton one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then these guys I'd never seen before.
Yeah. Well, you've seen some of them. So you have Tom Holland, who's Spider-Man.
Oh, that's who. Yeah, but he's the new Spider-Man, right?
New Spider-Man.
Yeah, I don't care.
The good Spider-Man.
Yeah, but that's the newest one.
The newest one from the MCU, yeah.
Yeah, that didn't ensnare me. Go on.
Yeah.
He's very good.
He's a great Spider-Man. He's the best.
Well, now I might watch it because of what I saw in this.
And he also you.
What? No, I know. Yeah, that's
we
the
need
way
to
it
end
is.
Early.
Yeah,
we need
maybe.
To end early.
Maybe. I just wasn't into it with Tom Holland. But now that I've seen him do this movie, which I didn't know that who he was. I'd never seen him before. So I'm like, all right, this guy's pretty good. He was the lead guy,
yeah,
right?
He's the lead guy. He's also, we've talked about him before. He's the one that's doing the Uncharted game. He's the guy is leading that Uncharted movie. He was the little dancing boy back in the day.
Billy Elliot. Oh, that's, oh. See, we keep doing this. I, no pun intended, we keep doing this dance. Yep. And, you know, the truth is now I have to watch Spider-Man. He's Billy Elliot. He's the other. This guy's great. Guy is a chameleon on top of. And Bill Skarsgård's in it, too.
Bill Skarsgård's in it. Also, one of the people that you think you don't know, Harry Melling, is actually one of the chess masters in Queen's Gambit.
No.
Yep.
Who did he play?
Harry Melling? He played the one that. The
Not
boy
in the
that,
Queen's Gambit, in the Devil.
Oh, he played Roy Laferte.
Oh, okay. Yeah, oh. See, this is what I'm saying. Like, they put this cast together, and then this is in 19, let's say. Yeah,
you also, you have Sebastian Stan in this, mm-hmm. who is Winter Soldier in the Captain America movies and in the new show Falcon and Winter Soldier. So you have a
very good also, by the way. And all the women in this movie, they are... there's a depth to it. There's a gravitas to all these characters. There's a lot of depth, man. I mean, the best, you know, they're all antiheroes. The best, you know, person in the movie, I guess, is Holland. Uh-huh. You know, he's probably got the lowest body count.
Right.
You know, I mean, this is about death and murder and statutory rape and religion in the South in the late 60s. Mm-hmm. Well, it starts, it's really like they took, what's that movie with Ryan Gosling? Behind the Pines?
Sure.
You know, do you know the one I'm talking about? Where he was the bank robber on the dirt bike? And it's where he met.
Beyond the Pines?
Beyond
or the
Pines.
The place Beyond the Pines.
Right. So that generational structure that The Place Beyond the Pines does, where it's like the father and then the sins of the father put onto the son. Mm-hmm. It's that same structure with a Shawshank Redemption narration. So you have the actual guy who wrote the book. He did the narration.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. It was really weird. I mean, it was great. I thought he sounded like Sam Elliott meets Morgan Freeman.
Interesting. And this is the one I read a little bit about this one. I haven't watched it all the way through yet, but where Robert Pattinson puts on this like iconic accent / like really weird kind of preacher voice, right?
No, he is Southern Baptist, like, you know, but the extreme, mm-hmm. the talking tongues kind, not the Robert Duvall, you know, in the Holy Ghost one that he did, but it's like one step below that, you know, in intensity, but it's, you know, you're just watching this guy and you're like, Jesus, this guy, he can do, like, he has no vanity. He can do anything. He's a horrible person in this.
Yeah, well, they say that he wouldn't tell anybody what his accent was going to be. He told him he was going to do one. He told the director, but refused to do it before anybody until he actually started recording. And so the first time anybody heard him actually do his voice for the character was the first time that the director said action.
It worked, and he is sleazy AF. I mean, in the best way. Like, it is such a, you know, it reminded me a bit, it was reminiscent of the Tom Cruise performance in Magnolia for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and wow. You know,
I thought that was a transformative thing for me with Tom. The first time I saw him do that, I was like, oh, okay, he's not just the action guy. That made me feel like he was an actor for the first time, like a real actor, not a movie star, an actor.
I'm telling you, that's what happens here. You know, when you're watching this, and Robert Pattinson's obviously an actor, but you know, he's been tasked with that. You were in Twilight thing.
Yeah, he's
bullshit.
A heartthrob, right? He's a hunk. He's a boba hunk or whatever they call him.
Right, but oh, God forbid you want to act, because remember when he was taking serious roles right after all the Twilights were over? They're like, oh, you suck. It's like, no, he doesn't. He's excellent.
He's amazing.
I think it's The Devil and All. Isn't it?
The Devil All the Time.
The Devil All the Time. I said it right the first time.
The Devil All the Time. You said it right.
The Devil All the Time. Yeah, and I'll tell you, it's not, it's like 2 hours and 13 minutes. It's not this short, quick movie. It's a slower paced. Oh,
it's
on top of it.
It's
you know
an
who's
indie
in
movie
it?
Some great people. Who?
Jason Clarke.
Who's Jason Clarke?
Look
know
him up. He's Star Wars guy. Like, you'll see him. I think he's in Star Wars.
Let's see.
English guy.
Well, everybody's in this movie. Chris Evans is in this movie.
In what?
In Devil All the Time.
Chris Evans was in this?
Yeah.
Wait, you're telling me I watched Chris Evans on screen and I didn't recognize him?
According to the cast, yes, absolutely you did.
Chris Evans was he?
He played somebody named, oh, maybe he's just a, he, it says he's in the cast, but it doesn't tell me where, so maybe he was just a producer.
Yeah, I don't think, I did not see that guy come on the screen, and this is a hell of a cast. But
yeah,
wait,
yeah, Jason Clarke. Oh, yeah, of course I know who Jason Clarke is. Right. Yeah, he's great. He played Carl Henderson. You also have...
he plays a serial killer in this.
Yeah. Tim Blake Nelson, who's great from Oh Brother Are Out There. He was one of the producers on this. You have
Buster Scruggs.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is what I'm telling you. This thing is... What is Antonio Campos directed? I know he's huge. I just don't know.
Let me see.
I can't place it. Because I'm telling you, you're watching this thing. And, you know, this is one of those movies that they would have released in normally like another month. Because it would have been an Oscar contender, this movie. They would have gone for Oscar stuff on this.
So it's interesting. There's nothing that what I would call like a mainstream movie in this list. This is good stuff. So he's done, his filmography is trying to get here where he's the director of them. Buy It Now, After School, Simon Killer, Christine. I've never heard of any of these, so I'm sorry about that.
I haven't either.
But those were the ones before Devil All the Time. So he hasn't done a bunch of big things.
Was he a writer on big stuff? I mean, how did this happen?
He was a writer. So he wrote Devil All the Time. He also did some stuff for, he did a couple little TV things. So he directed a couple episodes of The Punisher for Netflix. It looks like he did something called The Sinner, Homemade.
Okay, he's a big TV guy. If he did The Sinner and he did The Punisher, then he's a big TV guy, and he wrote this and he went out and cast it and did a hell of a job.
I mean, he got a great cast. I mean, he basically went over to the maybe everybody in Atlanta was just waiting around with COVID, and he's like, hey, everybody who's not currently being painted up to play a Marvel character right this minute, come over and record my little movie with me. It's great.
Yeah, and it looks like the cinematography is very, very textured. It's very, it reminded me a lot of Altman and a little of like Terrence Malick in his 70s work. Badlands, and I'm trying to, something with Heaven that he did. The cinematography was very reminiscent to that for me. And to be a guy who, well, listen, here's the thing. This is interesting. He's a TV director. He's a big TV director, which understandably now makes the jump from Netflix being The Punisher. That gets canceled. And then they're like, okay, you can go make this movie. And so he has the money. He's making the offers, right? And it plays well on the small screen.
Yeah, it plays great. I mean,
but I wonder if it would have played on a big screen, in the same way, let's say, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing did.
You know what? I think it would. I think this could play well. I think that there's the gravitas of his performances would have really done a good job. I think that this is one of those ones that big screen or small screen, it just plays really well. And those actors kind of come out and pop.
Yeah, listen, agreed.
It's not a TV movie. It's definitely not a TV movie. It's a movie. It's a film.
Did we have extra time when that we went over?
No, we went way over.
Oh my God. Okay, we're done. I love when days like this happen. Please forgive me. All right, everybody, stay safe. Stay sane, stay strong. Right, we're done, right?
We're done.
Okay, stay safe, stay sane, stay strong. Jason Smith.
Cliff Dorfman, I love you, everybody. Thank you very much for everything. Take care.
Bye. World. It's time.